gave me a lot of great advice, and obviously both my grandfather and my father were great influences on me.
In this week's Nolan from Adam podcast, we are joined by the sons of two legendary football figures who've gone on to accomplish great things in their own right. The first is Pittsburgh Steelers president, Art Rooney, who sat down with us at the owners' meetings in Arizona a couple of weeks ago, shortly before he lost his father, Dan Rooney, who died last week at the age of 84. Terry McDonough is the Arizona Cardinals vice president of player personnel, the son of the late, great Will McDonough, who might just be the finest football reporter who ever lived. Terry's got the draft coming up here. He's got the Arizona Cardinals board stacked the way he wants it. And he'll talk about that as well as being the son of the late, great Will McDonough. But we start with Art Rooney, the Steelers president, a man who has done so much during his great career, but also will be known as the son of Dan Rooney.
Mr. Rooney, a league of instability where franchises just change coaches all the time. You've had three coaches. What's the secret sauce here that the Pittsburgh Steelers use that nobody else uses?
Well, Adam, I don't know that there's a secret sauce. There is, I think, a desire on our part to have stability, and so that requires at times a little bit of patience. But we've been, number one, fortunate to have three men who were great football coaches that were able to step in and be with us for a long time. I guess part of it was we the last three guys we hired, Chuck Knoll and Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin, we hired each of them when they were relatively young. So they had sort of the time to develop and grow into the coaches they all became, and so we've benefited from that. But, number one, I think we've just been fortunate to have three guys like that become our coach.
When you see other teams go through the cycle of coaches that they did, what goes through your mind?
You know, I think that people do need to be a little more patient and work harder to surround the coaches with the right kind of organization that can help them be successful. Every franchise is different, so I don't really sit there and try to say, they should have done this, that, or the other thing. We have enough on our plate to figure out how to do things in our franchise. But it is, it's tough when you have that much turnover, and every time you change coaches, you're starting over. So it's not easy.
What stood out about Chuck Knoll to you? Like, if I ask you for a sort of quick synopsis, a little Mr. Rooney scouting report on Chuck Knoll and then Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin, what stands out about Chuck Knoll?
You know, Chuck was, I think all three of them, I would say, were people that really commanded the attention of the players day in and day out. And I always said that's a key to it. If the players start tuning the coach out, you're in trouble. And beginning with Chuck, it's interesting if you talk to the players who played for him, they all say the same thing, that they, had so much respect for him and enjoyed playing with him. And he wasn't somebody you would say was a player's coach by any stretch, but he commanded the respect, and I think they understood that all he wanted to do was make them better and turn the team into a championship team, and that's what they wanted, so they all bought in.
How about Bill Cowher?
You know, there were some similarities, I would say, between Bill and Chuck. Guys that Chuck grew up in Cleveland, came from a working class sort of background and played, came up playing football in Cleveland, then, played for the Browns. Bill had a similar kind of experience. Grew up in Pittsburgh, played football in youth football and high school football in Pittsburgh, and wound up actually playing for the Browns for a while. And so it's at times it's a little bit remarkable that the similarities between the two of them. But again, I think Bill's greatest strength was his ability to really command the attention of the room, and it was fun to work with him.
And Mike Tomlin?
And Mike's the same way. Somebody that commands the respect, the players enjoy playing for Mike. Mike's probably a little more of a player's coach than you might say Chuck and Bill were, but it's in terms of today's athlete, you know, I think Mike works hard to try to understand, you know, how do you connect with guys, you know, at this age, and it's a different world, and so you have to have a little different approach than probably Chuck would have had at this point. And I think Mike understands that and has adjusted well.
I remember when you hired Mike Tomlin over a number of candidates, including Russ Grimm, and people thought that Russ Grimm was getting that job. What do you remember about that interview process with Mike in particular that made him stood out to you as the candidate that you wound up selecting?
You know, it's funny. I can honestly say when we prepared our list of people we wanted to interview and Mike's name was on it, I had no expectation that we would hire Mike Tomlin coming out of that.
There you go.
That interview process, and so, you know, we set up the first interview, and he came in, and you know, at the end of it, we didn't say, okay, we're hiring this guy, but we did say this guy's a real candidate, and he's got to be, you know, in the mix of, you know, our whatever our finalists are going to be, he's got to be in the mix. And and it, you know, we had some internal candidates, both Russ Grimm and Ken Wisenhut. Yeah. And you know, if you would ask me at the beginning of that process, I would have said we'll probably hire one of the internal guys. So Mike, you know, he's just a very impressive man, and again, the, you know, the his ability to get your attention, get the players' attention, he's a pretty special guy.
Charismatic and dynamic.
Absolutely.
A very broad and open-ended question. Your dad, Ambassador Rooney, what has he meant for you, and how has he molded you as a owner, son, a person?
Well, you know, fortunately, my dad was always willing to have me around. I mean, I remember going to the office with my dad when I was, you know, every Saturday. That's what I look forward to. It'd take me to the office, and so, you know, he I owe a lot to him in the sense that he just, you know, brought me into everything at a young age, and you know, his patience was something that he always had a saying: never make a decision until you have to, because, you know, you never know whether you'll learn something along the line that'll affect the decision you're going to make. So I think that was something that, in terms of, you know, a sort of a management kind of attitude, you know, make sure you have as much information as you can possibly get before you make a final decision on something, and that's always kind of stuck with me. But, you know, as I say, his willingness to just include me in you know, everything, you know, he was the one, he told me, you know, I'm spending all my time with lawyers, maybe you should become a lawyer. So so I went to law school and became a lawyer, and turns out he's right. You spend a lot of time with lawyers in this business. So he gave me a lot of great advice, and you know, obviously both my grandfather and my father were great influences on me.
You talk about every Saturday at the office. What do you remember about those Saturdays?
Well, you know, in the early days, it was a pretty humble office. We was thinking back on it, you know, it was just the whole organization was just a handful of people. There was a storefront ticket office in the front, and then there were like just two or three offices in the back. And so, you know, we would go in there you know, he'd be going through different things. Sometimes we'd be talking about, you know, signing a player. Sometimes we'd be talking about how can we sell more tickets. In those days, we were trying to sell tickets. You know, our games weren't sold out, and we were trying to figure out how we'd sell tickets. You know, we were always looking forward to the Browns game because that was the only one we would sell out. And so it's funny how things change over the years. But it was, you know, most of the time my grandfather would be in there, and so it was, you know, it was fun just to sort of hang out with those guys and overhear their conversations.
It's hard to imagine a day when the Pittsburgh Steelers would have a tough time selling tickets.
It's true. You know, when the early days pre-Chuck Knoll, you know, there were some ups and downs. And truth of the matter is, you know, the Pirates, the baseball team, were kind of the biggest thing in town, and we were kind of struggling. Football in general was still a growing sport and trying to capture the imagination of America. And, you know, it was an interesting time to grow up in.
What has most surprised you about the growth of the game from the time that you were going to your dad's offices on Saturdays to where it is today?
Well, I would say that just the growth itself has been amazing. Like you said, I remember the early days when we weren't selling out and we were struggling to get the attention of the fans. And so obviously just the whole turnaround now, now we have fans all over the world. We have Steelers Nation, as our fans call themselves. It's remarkable. We show up in every city in America and they're there. And to be honest with you, back in those early days when we had that little ticket office and trying to sell tickets at Pitt Stadium, I wouldn't have guessed we'd
What changed it?
Winning. Winning, we were not a winning team prior to that, and I think Chuck Knoll brought a completely different sort of philosophy to the team, and my dad, my uncle Art started to become involved and really identified the draft as something that we wanted to focus on in terms of how we would build the team, and my uncle Art built a scouting department and built the Blesto organization. That's a scouting organization.
Really? I didn't know that.
So him and a fellow named Jack Butler, who was one of our players at one time, they came up with this idea of how to organize scouting, and they did a pretty good job.
That worked out okay.
It worked out okay, right.
You bring up Chuck Knoll again, and over the past year, I believe, the Chuck Knoll Foundation for Brain Injury Research was created. What does that mean to you?
Well, number one, it's great to be able to have a way to let's say further Chuck's legacy. He really was a coach that thought about and cared about the health of his players, and particularly the concussion issue was something that he really wanted to have more information about it. And so he had some conversations with our doctor Joe Maroon, and they through really Chuck's inspiration, Dr. Maroon will tell you to this day that Chuck inspired him to go and work with Dr. Lovell, and they came up with this baseline testing that today is kind of part of the standard practice for determining the health of a player and their concussion situation. So Chuck was there kind of at the beginning of trying to figure this piece of the puzzle out, and so we decided that it would be a great way to pay tribute to Chuck and also try to take advantage of a lot of the research that's being done in Pittsburgh in particular on the issue.
It's impressive. What do you think will come out of this in the long run?
Well, hopefully we'll understand, number one, maybe a better way to detect concussions, more certain tests. And number two, really, the treatment of concussions and brain injury. There's just a lot of research going on about all sports in terms of how concussions happen, how to prevent them, and then how to treat them. And we have in Pittsburgh one of the largest concussion clinics in the country, so it's really a great place to have access to study patients. And so those are the things that we hope more research will help us make sure that players who do have some kind of a brain injury have access to treatment and not have the kind of long-term consequences that we've seen in some of our players.
How much do you worry about that? Because there are a lot of people that raise a lot of concerns about the sport of football. We hear people raising questions about whether parents should let their kids play football. How much does that concern you as somebody who basically has made your living on football, spent your life around football, and you hear all these concerns about the sport of football?
Well, I think about it a lot. I spend a lot of time talking to doctors. I guess to put it in perspective, my grandfather played football, my father played football, I played football, and my son played football. So
wow.
It's, we all played in our family and loved the sport, and I'd do it again. I think it's really great sport, a great way to, you know, learn about what it takes to be successful in life, where, you know, how to overcome adversity and the mental and physical toughness that you need to be successful in life. I think the sport teaches, you know, the great lessons. And so it's something that, you know, we now understand a lot of things about concussion and, you know, not using the head and things like that that, you know, we didn't know 30 years ago, you know. So the way we practice, you know, the way we treat players, you know, it's changed dramatically. And, you know, it's something I spend a lot of time on, spend a lot of time with our doctors. Fortunately, you know, we have some doctors that have spent a lot of time on the subject and understand it. And, you know, I think it's the game is as safe as it's ever been. And I think we're working hard to make it safer. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's, you know, I don't have any problem recommending to somebody, you know, allow their son or daughter to play football.
You ever stop and wonder what your life would have been like if you had become a lawyer?
Well, I actually did become a lawyer and practice law for 20-some years before I came back into the football business. And so it was, you know, it was a great experience. I'm happy my father pointed me in that direction, and it was you know, a good part of my let's say growth in terms of understanding, you know, the business and the law, and was a worthwhile experience.
So after spending 20 years in law, what brought you back to the football business?
You know, it really was kind of a gradual process, and it kind of started with when we decided we need to build a new stadium. You know, my dad kind of threw that project in my lap and said, you know, I've already done this once. It's your turn. He was involved in building Three River Stadium. And so I became involved in trying to figure out, you know, the financing in particular for Heinz Field and then the legislative process that, you know, that we wound up going through in Pennsylvania. It was a much longer process than any of us thought about. And working with the Pirates, you know, we built two stadiums at one time in Pittsburgh, and so that whole project kind of brought me, you know, back into the organization, and so it sort of evolved from there.
What is the part of this job, Mr. Rooney, that gives you the greatest gratification?
You know, winning a game on Sunday, winning a championship, seeing our fans react to that, seeing our players react to that, it's, you know, every season is a new journey, and, you know, seeing the team develop to a point like last year where, you know, you start the season and you have high hopes, but you never know. And you get to the end of the season and the team is, you know, is playing well and you get into the playoffs. I mean, that's really what keeps you going and keeps you coming back is the challenge every year.
And what are you expecting for the 2017 season? Championship possible?
Well, I think, look, we feel like we have a team that can certainly compete. You know, we hopefully learned something last year. You know, we had some young guys that had the opportunity to play in playoff football, and hopefully that's something that bodes well. But look, every year is, like I said, you're starting over, and you can't take anything for granted. It's a cliche, but you got to take it a week at a time and just do your best to build a team, and hopefully you're staying healthy and you're playing well at the end.
Good luck starting over, and I really appreciate taking some time to speak with us today.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank
good
you,
to be
Mr.
with you.
Appreciate it. And there he is, the Pittsburgh Steelers president, Art Rooney. And now, the Arizona Cardinals vice president of player personnel, Terry McDonough.
Today's Nolan from Adam is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. It's the new year, which means a fresh start for your business. And a great year starts with making great hires. But posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter, you can jumpstart your hiring in 2017. Post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/football. That's ZipRecruiter.com/football. One more time to try for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/football.
Both you and Art Rooney are the sons of football legends, in my mind. Legends. So what did you think when you heard about the passing of Mr. Rooney last week? And what would you imagine Art Rooney and the rest of his family are now going through?
Well, I'm close friends with Dan Rooney Jr. He's been scouting Adam for the last 26 years. We started together in the World League back in the early 90s, so he's a very close friend of mine. So it hits home on a personal level. My father, one thing the Rooneys and the McDonoughs have in common, we're both 100% Irish. So my dad and Mr. Rooney just developed this friendship probably back in, you know, the early 60s. So we've been close friends with him. It's a shock, but his legacy will always live on. In other words, when I was looking for you last week at the owners' meetings, if I had a dollar for everybody that said that week to me, your father was this, your father was that, and he'll be missed, but his legacy will continue on forever, and they'll hear a bunch about him over the next 20 years from people around the NFL. His legacy will certainly carry forward.
I don't know if you've had a chance to speak to Dan Rooney since the passing of his father, but if you have, what did you say? And if you haven't, what would you say to him about what he's going through?
I sent him a text, and I said, Dan, your father was a giant, and you sent me the same text 14 years ago when I lost my dad, and we were both very lucky to have fathers that were so instrumental, not only, you know, in our lives and our kids' lives, but so many people's lives. And I think my father and Mr. Rooney both had something in common. They used their platform, whether it was an owner or a sports writer, to reach out to as many people as they could and help them. And that's what they'll be remembered for, their giving, their kindness. And he sent me one back saying, Terry, I'll catch up with you soon. It's been chaotic. But no, a true giant, and he'll be missed by everybody that he ever came in contact with.
Do you remember anything about your father's relationship with Dan Rooney at all?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they were close, but you know, the Irish are, they keep everything to themselves. This is a true story. My father told me this a long time ago, and I don't know if it should get out or not, but I'm going to tell it because it was a good story. There was a chance, you probably better with the years than I, but the Patriots at one time were going to possibly move to Hartford. I don't know if you remember that. It might have been about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And South Boston, where my dad's from, was originally an issue. But as the Boston political machine would have it, that was not an option. So there was a chance that they were going to move the team to Connecticut, to Hartford. And I remember vividly, behind closed doors, but I'm sure it's so much further down the line, it's not a big deal, that my father, Mr. Rooney, maybe the owner of the Patriots, maybe the commissioner, I don't know who was there, but there was a select group of men. I know my father and Mr. Rooney were there that all convened somewhere. And they met on the topic, and then eventually it got ironed out that the Patriots were going to stay in Foxborough. And the story never got out. But that was just one example of those two getting together and saying, okay, what's in the best interest of the NFL? And Mr. Rooney and my father got together, and they talked about it. And obviously the rest is history. The Patriots have stayed in Foxborough, and you know, they went on to become a dynasty.
And that's the type of work that your father did all through the years and why he achieved the legendary status he always will have as maybe the greatest football reporter who has ever lived. Your family, Terry, also quite accomplished in its own right. Sean, obviously, the Monday Night Football voice, play-by-play announcer. Your brother Ryan is the general manager of the Phoenix Suns. I don't know what Aaron and Kara do, but perhaps you could fill me in there and just speak about your siblings and all that they have accomplished in addition to yourself.
Well, I think the boys will all admit, Adam, that the two girls are probably the two smartest in the family. My youngest sister, Kara, went to Harvard, and she got her MBA from Harvard, and she's now a vice president at Under Armour. She's the youngest.
Wow.
So she's worked her way up there. And my oldest sister, Erin, is a vice president of public relations at a hospital in Boston. I hope that's her right title. But, no, I'm very proud of all my siblings. I know I'm bragging a little bit, but I have to throw my beautiful wife and my three children in there. My wife Lynette's amazing, and my oldest son graduated from Notre Dame. And as a matter of fact, I think he might have an opportunity in the NFL here soon. He wants to follow in my footsteps, like I always wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. And my youngest son Brendan is going to be named captain of Georgetown University soccer team this week.
Wow,
that's going to be a big honor. And my daughter Caroline's everybody's favorite. Yeah. She has cerebral palsy and autism, and she's God's gift to anybody she comes in contact with. She's my favorite person in the world, and she's my angel.
What is that like, raising Caroline?
My aunt Tootsie, who was my father's sister, was a Roman Catholic nun. She went into the convent at 17 years old, and she spent 69 years until her 90th, until her death a bunch of years ago, every day in prayer. And she was the hero in our family. It wasn't any of the McDonough men. It was Sister Mary Martinez. She, when you saw her and talked to her, you thought you were talking directly to God. And she said to me when Caroline was born, she said, "You don't know how fortunate you are, because Caroline is God's gift to you, because she's not capable of sin." And from that day forward, I just had such an amazing appreciation and gratitude for having a special needs child. And as a matter of fact, whenever I see special needs kids anywhere, I immediately just go up to them and talk to their parents. And those of us that have special needs children, we're truly blessed.
How has it changed your perspective, Terry?
I try not to complain as much, but my wife will tell you, Adam, that's not true. It's unconditional love is an amazing thing. Like, I know your story, Adam, and the unconditional love, you know, it's no different than you. When you met your beautiful wife and your kids, and you became a blended family, it was a higher power, God. It happened not by chance, but by the way it was supposed to. And I really believe we never once said, "Woe is us," because anybody that meets Caroline, she smiles, she's happy, she loves people, and she's not capable of resentment. I don't think she has a lot of fear, anger, self-pity, all those things that, quote, mainstream humans care about. She just wants to make sure she's eating, she's happy, she's dancing, she's smiling. And I'll tell you, when I go into her class and I see all those kids in wheelchairs and kids with Down syndrome, something happens to me that I can't even describe. It's my happiest moment. I don't want to leave the classroom, because those kids come up and they hug you and they kiss you, and it just makes you feel like $1 million.
You know, what's amazing is in the conversations we've had over time, you've spent a lot more time talking about Caroline than you ever have any of your brothers or sisters or anything like that. And I guess that's a testament to your dedication, devotion to her, and your strength of feelings to her. And that's a compliment to you, and I commend you for that.
Well, I'm selfish, because she's makes me feel better every time I'm with her, because she loves her daddy. And you know, she's 20. My youngest son Brendan's 20. My oldest son Patrick's 22. She's 21, right in between them. And what a gift! I have an opportunity every year to take her trick or treating. She's going to be 50, 60 years old, and if I'm still here, God willing, I'll be able to take my daughter trick or treating. So all those amazing things I get to do with her, I really am blessed for that.
Now, what about Patrick going into the NFL? Where's he going to go work?
He went to Notre Dame, and he was a finance major. But when he was there, it's interesting. It shows you the close-knit community at Notre Dame. His boss was Tim McDonald, who happens to be a Mara, and he's working with the Giants now. And his other boss was a McCaskey. Yeah. I think it's Connor McCaskey. So he had two bosses who's at Notre Dame whose family owned NFL football teams. So he his freshman year, they went to the national championship game. He spent 2 years doing that. Eric DaCosta, who's a guy that you and I both really look up to. He's going to be a tremendous general manager. He's very influential in my career. He's the assistant GM. I respect him as much as anybody in the NFL. He gave Patrick an internship. So between the Notre Dame working there and then doing an internship with Baltimore while he was at Notre Dame, he's always wanted to, you know, get around the NFL. Anyone that works in and around the NFL knows it's truly a gift to do this. And Patrick always wanted to do it. And I think he's going to have an opportunity with a team right after the draft. But I don't want to jinx it yet.
Right.
So off the air, Adam, I'll tell you. But, yeah, I think it's a tremendous organization with a lot of people that had worked in Baltimore with great ownership and a franchise quarterback. So I said, Patrick, go in there. Do what you did, Adam, when you got started, and I did. Be humble. Show up early. Know everybody's name in the building. Treat everybody with respect. Work your tail off, and great things will happen for you.
Good for you. And Brendan is playing soccer at Georgetown, huh?
Yeah, they're a traditional power, even though they've never won a national championship. They're always hanging around. They've lost, and I think, two. His freshman year, he played alongside of the second, third, and 16th overall pick in the first round of the MLS draft. So he's had they're a great team. They've never won at all. He loves his teammates. He loves D.C. He loves his coaches, and he wants to be part of the first Georgetown Hoyer ever, soccer national champion. So they're always in the mix, but they've never won at all. But he loves what I said to Patrick and Brendan. I said, forget about where I want you to go. When you go to college, and this is something anybody that's listening to this, allow your children to go to the college that they want to. Because if they do that, then they're fully invested in that commitment. And Patrick always wanted to go to Notre Dame, mm-hmm. and Brendan always wanted to play soccer at Georgetown. And it worked out for both of them.
Good for them. And so we've got Notre Dame, we've got Georgetown, we've got Caroline, we've got sisters who are vice presidents, we've got brothers who are Monday Night Football announcers and general managers and you. So where does all this success come from for the McDonough clan? Like, how does that happen to one family?
Genetics. It's like all these great athletes, their parents are usually great athletes. My father, as you know, I always tell this, Adam, I said, my dad, for whatever his occupation was, he was the most well-respected person I've ever met in my life. And he instilled his values along with my mother and my stepmother, and I had tremendous aunts. My aunt Tootsie, who I mentioned, the nun, yep. and a couple other aunts. Everything was about education. Everything was about giving back, being good to people, doing the next right thing. And we've been very fortunate. My father opened up the doorway for me, for both my brothers. He was very influential, and we've been very lucky. And more importantly, they're good people. Good spouses, good parents. I'm very proud of the type of people my siblings are.
As you should be. It's incredible to see all that you all have accomplished. And you know that I am a huge fan of the McDonough family. So congratulations on the success that everybody has.
Well, let me brag about you for a second.
No. We're not going to do that.
Give me 20 seconds. Give me 20 seconds.
Terry.
My father had certain people that he could talk to that behind the scenes, owners, GMs, whatever. And he did it without people seeing it. So I'm at the owners' meetings last week. I said to Eric DaCosta, I haven't seen Adam around. He said, oh, he meets with the owners in the morning and the GMs and the head coaches. Nobody sees them. So you do the same thing that my dad did. And very few people, maybe you, my father, very few people have that kind of access. And I'm not saying this because I'm on your podcast, but you're a giant. You're the Will McDonough of the modern day.
Well, there could be nothing. There could be nothing that is more meaningful than that. I knew your dad. I learned things from your dad. I had the great privilege of being around your dad. He took me one time in a limo to the owners' meetings at that Biltmore Hotel when I was a young Cub reporter, and I was drilling him with questions, and I'll never forget that ride, and I wish I had it on videotape, and I had great love for your dad. He got me into the Boston Marathon and actually nearly almost killed me. That's a separate story for another day, Terry. But
well, I'm glad you're still here.
He got me into the Boston Marathon. I did raise about $20,000 for a children's hospital in Denver. But
when you see into it, you finished it?
Oh, you don't know the story?
No, give it to me.
It's unbelievable. So basically, your dad gets me into the Boston Marathon. This is a true story. Dad gets me into the Boston Marathon. You have to qualify, but of course, your dad knew everybody in Boston. Gets me into the marathon, and I decide I ran it in memory of my grandfather, who I love more than anybody in life, and had passed away of lung cancer. And I said, I'm going to raise money for the Children's Cancer Center of a hospital in Denver. So I went around and raised money. Now, Pat Bowlen, the owner of the Broncos, used to run marathons himself. And he sent me a letter that said, if you run the marathon and finish it, or you beat my time, my all-time best marathon time of 3 hours and 18 minutes, I will donate $26,200 to the Children's Hospital in your name. If you run in under 4 hours, I will donate $2,620 to Children's Hospital in your name. If you finish it at all, $1,000 to Children's Hospital in your name. And if you don't finish it, you will donate $1,000 to Children's Hospital in my name. Now, let's see. This was 2003, so I would have been at that point 37 years old, 36, 37 years old. So $1,000, like, I'm just telling you, that was a lot of money. And it was a great cause, but it was a lot of money. And sure. I start running. I ran the marathon. The forecasters just totally missed the weather forecast that day. They said it was going to be overcast, gray, rainy, windy. And I wore this black fleece-lined outfit, a black fleece-lined top, a black fleece-lined bottom. I get to the starting line. I had never run a marathon before. And it was probably blue sky, 65 degrees. You know, we get started much warmer, much sunnier than they expected. And we get to about the third or fourth mile, and my legs start cramping up. And by the sixth or seventh mile, it feels like there's aliens coming out of my calves. And by the 10th or 11th mile, I literally, and I've never had this happen to me in my life, Terry, I cannot move my arms. I cannot raise them. And I'm thinking, I cannot believe that I'm going to owe $1,000 to Children's Hospital in Pat Boland's name for not finishing this marathon. Well, I willed myself to finish, and it was brutal. I mean, it was so brutal because there was a restaurant right there on Boylston Street that night after I finished, and I finished in 4 hours and 41 minutes. I did the first half of it in 1 hour and 51 minutes. I could not walk down the stairs to the restaurant. Could not get down. Had to take an elevator. And the next day I flew back to Denver, and all I could say is the flight was so unpleasant. I was rolling on the ground. I would rather have run another marathon that day than go through that flight again. We landed. They took me on a stretcher off the plane, took me to the hospital. I had rhabdomyolysis, where your kidney shuts down and you could die. You could basically be there are all kinds of effects long term. And I was in the hospital for a few days, and literally I felt like I was dying on the plane because I probably was dying. And it was brutal. It was brutal. But Pat Boland did write the check for $1,000 to Children's Hospital in my name. So there we go, right? Long story.
There was no way you weren't going to – you would have crawled to the finish line.
100%. And that's what happened. And it was brutal. If you see the pictures I got, I mean, it was awful. It was awful. But it's a great story, I guess. And your dad helped create it, and Pat Boland helped drive it along. So there we go. So anyway, we digress. But this past offseason – you had the chance to be a finalist for the 49ers general manager's job, a job that I think you'll get one day, whether that's next year or the year after or the year after. But one of these GM's job is going to be yours, because it should be yours. My question to you is, what was it like to be a finalist, and what did you take out of that experience?
It was a tremendous experience. I had a lot of very influential people that helped me get there. It was fun because you work your whole life to achieve, I guess, the top rung. I've been happy I love working for the Cardinals, but every guy that starts out as a scout, the top of the chain is a general manager. You get a chance to build your dream team. Well, the reality of it was I had an opportunity, and I went in, and all I wanted to do is I said to myself, okay, Terry, be yourself, be prepared, and let the chips fall where they may. It was a long process. The 49ers did an incredible job with their diligence. As you know, they went across the country, and it was great. And then I had the good fortune of doing a good enough job where they brought, we thought originally, two people back, right? Myself and George Patton, and then it was actually three people, John Lynch. And they said it was a very tough decision between the three of us, but I was just very grateful that I had an opportunity to go sit down in front of an ownership group, because I had tremendous support, and I just really was grateful for the opportunity. I was excited. It was 25, 26 years in the NFL, and I finally got an opportunity to sit at the table, and I got some great advice after by people saying basically, hey, it's a great shot. You did a great job. Calm down, relax, go back to the Cardinals. You know you love your job there. Help try to win a Super Bowl champion. If it's supposed to happen again, it will. But then I had the good fortune of going to my first owners' meetings this year, and I met a lot more people there. So it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it.
What did you take out of the experience?
that there's 32 of these things in the NFL. The NFL is just this amazing business. So much goes into it. And it's not easy, but if you keep working hard, treat people with respect, do your job, eventually your number will be called. And I know a little bit about your story, all the doors you had to knock on. It's amazing, your story, when you first got started. Hopefully I won't have to go through as many no's as you did.
I had a
lot. But, you know, if I think at the end, if you do the right thing, you always eventually end up where you're supposed to.
So we have the draft coming up here. What is it like as the vice president of player personnel for the Arizona Cardinals to get ready for a draft that is basically your Super Bowl, if you will?
Well, the heavy lifting is done. It just finished last week. In other words, the scouts go out in the fall. Yeah. They gather all the information. The fall ends. The players go into this, the bowl game season, the college all-star game season. And then that ends, and then 100 juniors decide they want to declare. So you it's a 12-month process. And then we go to the combine, and then we go back and work these kids out on campus. And then you have meetings with your coaches and your staff. We just finished 2 weeks' worth of meetings where we basically have to stack our board. You put them in order.
Yep.
It's you know, you have every position in order, and then Steve will sit down with Bruce and the scouts and the coaches, and then we'll have a like 1 to 120 or 150 ranked in order. And it's a tremendous thing. And then when it comes to picking them, you want to take the next best guy. But if people are on the same level, and you might have a little bit more need, as long as it's on the same level, you might take a different guy. But that's all it is. It's just ranking him and hoping that it falls your way, because a lot of times it does, and sometimes it doesn't. But when you think it doesn't, sometimes it does. I can give you a couple good examples of David Johnson. I think if you ever watched the thing a couple of years, David Johnson's arguably our best player, one of our best players. We got a bunch of good ones. He's in the top five.
Yep.
Well, we were sitting in there, and an All or Nothing series was filming us in the draft room during that draft. And we were trying to take a running back from Nebraska. And I was on the phone with him, and the next thing you know, Detroit's trying to call him. And I'm thinking it's 1970 where I can stall and keep the kid on the phone. And you can't do that anymore. So he ends up going to Detroit. Well, that's being filmed. So then we ended up taking David Johnson. He turns out to be one of the best players in the NFL. And one more is, I remember when I was in Baltimore, I forget, where'd we pick Ed Reed? 20, 21, 22?
That's about right.
Well, we had five guys on the board, and they all went boom, 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 boom. And Ozzie's like, okay, well, you know, we took Ed Reed. And we saw how that turned out. So I guess the year we took Ray Lewis, Green Bay had the next pick after us, and they couldn't wait to get Ray Lewis. Well, he went one pick ahead to us. So you have to get lucky. Be prepared, and then let the chips fall where they may. And then, you know, a lot of luck goes into it.
When you look at this draft and your 120, 150 players on your board stacked the way they are, what stands out about this draft in particular?
I think it's, again, this is 25, 26 years for me. There's never been this many defensive backs, corners, safeties. It's loaded. You'll see a ton of corners and safeties go in the top two rounds. It's very deep. It usually is deep at receiver. There might not be all these hot shots at the top, but people probably feel they can get a good receiver in the third round. It's a very good tight end draft. Offensive line, it's not. It's usually it's pretty weak in the offensive line. Quarterbacks, Adam, it's, you know, in a typical draft, everybody knows, okay, this guy's the best, this guy's the second best, and then there'll be a bunch of difference of opinions. Well, in this draft, there's five guys, and if you ask five different guys like me, they might tell you he's the best quarterback.
Yep.
So the intrigue with the quarterback position, where they go, who goes, I think will be fascinating on draft day.
So I shouldn't believe all this Arizona Cardinals love Patrick Mahomes stories that are out there right now?
Well, usually, you know, Eric DeCosta and I always talk about, we tell the truth in the fall. So anything you hear in the spring, don't believe from anybody. You know that, right? There is more smoke screens going on by people that are trying to throw everybody else off. One thing I know we've done, our owner and Steve, every single quarterback in this draft, the top six or seven guys that are considered the top three rounds, we've worked out every one of them, and we've had every one of them in for a visit. So we're going to leave no stone unturned in our quest to find a guy for the future. And if it doesn't work out, there'll be a bunch of good quarterbacks coming up next year.
Terry, I want to thank you very much for taking the time today. I want to thank you and your family for all the guidance over the years, for the accomplishments that you all have achieved. It's an honor to be associated with the McDonough family. Sean, you, Ryan, even though I've never met him. And I appreciate taking some time today.
Next time we talk, we have to brag about your family. I feel pretty selfish that I monopolized
the
time.
Please, please. This is about you, Terry. Thank you for taking the time before the draft, and good luck during the draft.
Thanks for everything you've done. Appreciate you, Adam.
Thank you, Terry.